in this dark, miserable, material world, whatever happens, we can go on remembering and glorifying Krishna. Sri Jaya Deva Kaveridam Uditamudaram Srinu Sukadam Shubhadam Bhavasaram Keshava Dhritta Dashavidharupa Jai Jagadisha Hare. This Jayadev Goswami concluding his prayers of praise to the 10 principal avatars says that by recitation of this, that's the Jai Jagadisha Hare, of which we sing regularly, Keshava Dhritta Narahari Rupa. He says by singing this magnanimous song, this which showers auspiciousness and happiness in this world of birth and death by remembering Krishna. So, remembering Krishna, especially this Vishnu Sahasranama, is emphasizing more on his functions as Vishnu. We say functions, well, he does function, but it's all his own pleasure, his own kindness, his interactions with this world and the devotees and the non-devotees within it. So name 135, 136, and 137 are listed together. They're similar names. Lokadhyaksha, Suradhyaksha, and Dharmadhyaksha. So Adhyaksha means literally, if we literally translate into English, it means overseer. So he's the overseer of Loka, which means all the planets and all the people within the planets. He's the overseer of the Sura, which means the demigods or the godly people, or particularly the devotees. And he's the overseer of Dharma, which is a word of its own. Not very translated. I mean, it can be translated, but it has so many meanings, and they're all important. No one word can translate Dharma, and even if you give so many different meanings, such as law, harmony, principle of the universe, rules, even if you give all the words together, still you won't get the complete sense of what it means. So better just to say the word Dharma and try to understand it from the context in which it appears. So Krishna is the overseer of all of this. Krishna is the overseer of everything. That he states in the Bhagavad Gita. What is that verse? This Mayata, no, not this one. Hetuna anena konteya jagadvi parivarte. How does that verse begin? Maya adhyakshena. Yeah, that's the word. Adhyaksha. Maya adhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetuna anena konteya jagadvi parivartate. So this adhyakshena, maya adhyakshena, by my supervision, by my overseeing. Maya adhyakshena prakriti suyate. All this material energy that is overseen by me, Krishna says, with all moving and non-moving beings, with all causes and effects, everything is overseen by Krishna. So that name fits very well with Lokadhyaksha. He oversees all the planets. He oversees everything. Just few names ago came this Sarvavit, the knower of everything, and in discussing that I concentrated on, or I emphasized his means this of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his knowing everything from the microcosmic level. He sees all the details. But he also sees from the macro level. He sees that he's all-knowing by seeing everything down to the very smallest detail of how one atom is moving over another, how, in according to modern scientific explanations, how atoms form into molecules, and then molecules form into cells. So from the microscopic level, and here is described the macroscopic level, how he oversees everything, the great orchestrator of everything. And also at the intermediate levels, how do we, the vast movements of the planets, how the whole universe comes into being, how it is maintained, how it is ultimately destroyed and enter into him, that's at the macroscopic level. And at the intermediate level, how people are living in this world, interacting in this world, how each person, they perform activities in the human form of life. Loka particularly means human. Lokadhyaksha. Krishna is the overseer of all living beings, but he is specifically given Lokadhyaksha, which loka can mean persons, specifically humans, the human form of life being most important. So Krishna oversees all the living beings, and especially in human life, that's a crossroads, whereby, wherein one is, one receives a body according to previous karmic reactions. Of course, that's true in every form of life, but particularly in the human form of life, one is generating more karmic reactions. One is making one's future. We're all self-made. We've heard of the self-made man. We're all self-made. We're all, whatever situation we have, it's because of what we did in previous lives. And we're not only self-made, but we're going on making our future situation. By every action has brings a reaction. And in other ages, other than Kali Yuga, even by thinking well of others or thinking badly of others, that also brought a reaction. Whereas in Kali Yuga, only by thinking well we get a good reaction, but by thinking badly we don't get a bad reaction, because it would be, we'd be in too much of a hopeless situation otherwise. That's Krishna's kind mercy on us. So Krishna oversees that. How we get different bodies. He understands all our thoughts, our activities, the motivation behind it, and we are awarded different bodies. Yesterday someone was asking about how we get the different bodies, and that's described in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. How karmana daiva netrena jantur dehopapatiye. According to our previous activities, under the supervision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His representatives, or the demigods, each living being gets a suitable body. And it's how He orchestrates everything is quite amazing. Anyone who's tried to orchestrate anything in this world can understand that it's not an easy task. To Srila Prabhupada points out that in Kali Yuga, to maintain a family, that's a great task. If someone can even maintain a family, that's considered a great achievement. Even to hold a family together for 20, 30 years, that's, in the modern age, that's a great achievement for anyone to do that. Even to manage one or two children is a great achievement. Don't think the housewife is a negligible task. It's a great achievement. And then what to mention of overseeing a even a small factory, a big business corporation, a temple, even a traveling Sankirtan party. You have four or five highly charged brahmacharis all in one Sankirtan van. It's quite an achievement to hold. Usually they don't hold together for more than a week or two at a time, and then you have to reshuffle the parties. Too much dynamic energy all in one little van. Then, how about this? Orchestra conductor. How about that? That's a great skill, huh? To orchestrate a whole orchestra. And you indicate here, now it's time for you, and all the indications, meaning to play a little gently, okay, now play loudly. So that's a great task, to orchestrate an orchestra, to be a conductor. But Krishna orchestrates all the activities of the universe, from the smallest atom through all the living beings. Each living being is placed in exactly the proper position for them to play out their karmic reactions according to their present situation. So, and not only they're playing out their karmic reactions, but they're also doing so in interaction with others. So it's and what to mention, the scientists, they're making so much research into the nature of the universe and discovering more and more laws of the universe. And now the latest great breakthrough, Higgs boson, the God particle, they call it, as if it's some particle is replacing God. And they'll make more breakthroughs and more breakthroughs and more breakthroughs, and they can't understand that there's a great orchestrator holding it all together. And no one could do this except Krishna. And because the atheistic scientists, they can't imagine that anyone could be so intelligent and so organized and be able to understand it all, and they're all trying to understand it all. And even a great scientist, he can only understand it within a certain area. Just like Einstein, he wasn't a doctor. He was, so we're told, brilliant in physics, but we don't know actually, because we don't know what, unless you're trained in that field, you don't know actually what he was doing or saying. He wasn't a doctor, he wasn't a geologist, he wasn't a geneticist. Was it genetics at that time? No. Anyway, came up a little later. So, he didn't even know about it. So he could only specialize in one field, but Krishna, he set up this whole thing, and someone is considered a great personality if they can understand to a very limited extent some small portion if he has knowledge in some small area of everything that Krishna has set up. So the atheists, they cannot understand or accept that there can be someone who is far more intelligent than Einstein, and who actually gave the intelligence to Einstein and took it away also. They can't accept, but that is Krishna. He's orchestrating everything. It's just beyond our imagination. If at all we study the nature of this world, science and psychology and how everything is going on, we can get one who is theistic. By study of this world, they can appreciate Krishna more and more and more. How great he is. That verse is there. Idang hi pungsas tapasas shutasya va va svishtasya suktasya cha buddhi datta yoho avichutartho kavibhyani rupita yadutama shloka gunarna varnunam. That word kavi comes in this word. The seer that was discussed this morning. So this means not Krishna the Kavi, but a learned person of this world, for all their study, learning of the Vedas, their austerity, and Srila Prabhupada in his explanation to this verse said, all arts, all sciences, all branches of learning, all endeavors, the proper utilization of them is to glorify Krishna. So this is the best science, or real science, is to recognize the great scientist in the sky. He's not only in the sky, he's everywhere. He's on the land, he's in all the elements, he sees everything, he oversees everything. And even our ability to understand is only by his mercy. One who recognizes that is glorious. One who doesn't recognize that is lost. The great mistake of everyone in this material world, we're in this material world, because we don't recognize that we are being orchestrated by Krishna. That we have independence to a minute extent. We overestimate our independence. The fact that we have certain choices, but we don't see how much we're limited. We can't choose whether what kind of body we get. Well, we can to some extent if we have Vedic knowledge, but whatever body we've got, that's it. It's forced upon us. If we decide, I want to go to the moon right now, we can't do it. If we think, I want to fly in the air, we can't do it. If we think, I want to do yoga exercises, it's probably better kept for another time and place, rather than in the discourse here. So we're very limited in what we can do, but we falsely think that we have great freedom and we're doing whatever we like. So that's prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashah ahankara vimudhatma kartahamiti manyate. Not seeing that Krishna is setting up the whole universe. He's put us in the situation that we're in. And that whatever we can do is only because he allows us to do it and gives us the ability to do it. Not recognizing this and thinking oneself to be acting independently is foolishness. So it is most appropriate for us to discuss regularly how Krishna is the overseer of everything. He sees everything, he oversees it, he gives power of attorney, or he delegates responsibility to various demigods for overseeing the universe, and he oversees them also. So in this way, he's Lokadhyaksha, the witness and overseer of all the planets and all the persons therein. He's particularly the overseer of the suras, the demigods, because they have to oversee the universal functions. The rain is falling, the wind is blowing, the sun is shining, this is all going on under the supervision of Krishna, but there are assisting agents, the demigods, and even to open our eyes, that blinking is going on, opening and closing of eyes, there's a demigod for that, for digestion, there are demigods who are overseeing that. For passing stool, there are demigods who oversees that. So everything is overseen by demigods, and Krishna oversees them all as Suradhyaksha. And Sura also means the saintly persons, the devotees. So Krishna, although he oversees everyone, He keeps a special eye on his devotee, especially oversees the devotee. He guides them so that they may come to him. Dadami buddhi. Tesham evan, what is that? Tesham satasyuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mamu piyanti te. Tesham evanukam bhartam aham agyana jangtam aha nashyami atma bhavastho. Jnana dipena bhasvata. Krishna, he sees if someone is sincerely trying to serve him, if someone is developing love for him and desires to be always absorbed in his service, then Krishna, he gives the intelligence to such devotees so they can come to him. And the ignorance that is in our hearts that separates us from Krishna, Krishna dispels that by giving the lamp of knowledge that dispels the darkness. So Krishna is especially looking after the devotees. And even if a devotee, someone's taken to Krishna consciousness seriously, but they stray away from the path, but still Krishna keeps special eye on them. Krishna is he oversees the whole universe to facilitate the rebellious jivas' desires to enjoy separately from him. He could just close them down and chuck them into the impersonal Brahman. But he facilitates. It's quite amazing how Krishna, he facilitates the desires of the jivas to be rebellious to him. But he's not very happy with that, but nevertheless he facilitates. Just like a father may facilitate a child, even if the child wants to do, if the child insists, the father may allow them to do something which is not actually in the child's best interest, but the father, he indulges them. But knowing that they are so adamant to do wrong, but still the father makes all endeavor to bring them back to the right path. And Krishna never gives up. So he oversees he never gives up trying to bring the rebellious souls back to him, and especially those who have come to that path, who have decided, now I want to serve Krishna. And Krishna especially helps them and guides them so that they come to him. And in this way, he is Dharma Dhyaksha. He's the overseer of Dharma. Dharma, yeah, it's how the universe is going on, the order within the universe, the laws of the universe, that is Dharma. And at the higher level, Dharma means to serve Krishna. The dharma is that which should be observed, and that worldly dharma, of course no one can not, in one sense no one can not follow dharma, but in civilized society, when we say civilized society, we don't mean modern America, we mean varnashram society. That this society is divided, and each person has to follow their particular dharma. So Krishna oversees that, and when dharma becomes, the observance of dharma becomes forgotten or misconstrued or depleted in human society, then Krishna comes. He says, yada yada hi dharmasya glane bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya tadushkutam dharma sangsthapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Whenever there is a decline in dharma and a concomitant increase of adharma, then Krishna comes. He uplifts, to uplift the devotees, to destroy the rascals, and to re-establish the principles of dharma. Krishna appears in every age. So to re-establish the principles of dharma, well, this means at the highest level to establish devotional service to himself. And at the worldly level, the lokic level, this word here, loka, means people, and lokic means, loka means people or planet or the world, and lokic means of the world, worldly. So that's a common and important word if you want to add that to your vocabulary. Those who are from India know it automatically. It's a common word, lokic. As it means ordinary or worldly, as opposed to adhyatmic or spiritual, or lokic as opposed to Vaidic. Lokic means ordinary usages, cultural usages, whereas Vaidic are prescribed duties given in Shastra. So, lokic dharma, the dharma of this world, when Krishna says he comes to establish dharma, that importantly means varnashram dharma, the division of society into specific division into Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Antyaja, those who are outside of the Varnashram system, and then the four ashrams. So without this, of course, that's always there in some form or other, even without the specific division, but without the specific division with all the specific duties to be followed, then society is not considered civilized. So Krishna, he is the giver of dharma. Dharmang tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Dharma is that which is prescribed by and given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he comes to re-establish that when it becomes by the actions of godless persons, it becomes broken down, and then Krishna comes to re-establish that. So he is also, that's the, at the worldly level, there is Varnashram Dharma, which is the social system to be followed by civilized persons so that they can come to the actual level of Dharma, which is Krishna consciousness. So the dharma for this Kali Yuga, Yuga Dharma, is Harinama Sankirtan. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, they are known as Yuga Dharma Pala. They are the protectors of the Yuga Dharma. So this Sankirtan movement of chanting the holy names of Krishna, that is directly overseen by Krishna. So if we take to this Krishna consciousness movement, that is the best service for human society. Many people, they want to perform service to human society by various social and political means. They want to improve human society. But unless dharma is established, piecemeal attempts to improve the world, that cannot actually benefit it. So by understanding dharma, that is a holistic approach to solving all the problems of the world. The people, they want to improve the ecological balance, but they cannot do so as long as there is rampant greed is the ruling force in society. Then there's no question of ecological improvement. Just like they talk about putting putting a cap on carbon emissions, but the cap should be, they should cap it down to zero immediately if there's going to be any hope for the depleting ozone layer, according to what they say. But they know they can't do that because there are certain, for the benefit of the human race, for upcoming generations, they should just stop all these. I mean, the carbon emission is there every time we breathe out and fart. But this excessive and unnatural, that cannot be stopped because there are certain vested interests who they're too powerful in human society to, they're not just going to say, okay, BP and Shell and all these different companies, yes, okay, let's just stop all this. They're not going to do it. They're very powerful in human society. So the motivating force of Shell and BP is not the good of human society. It's profit, profit, profit. And one other thing, profit. And what else? Profit. Kim anyat kama haitukam. What else is there but material desire, yeah, manifest. Kam, krodh, lobha, all these go together. Kam, krodh, what else is there? Yeah, there's mundane desire, anger, or that's channeled into the driving force which makes someone a workaholic zillionaire. And lobha, greed. Greed is a transformation of karma. So how can the world be actually improved? Well, what should we do? Go and find all these super rich people. They have their meeting, which they have their meetings, and who's going to be the next president of America? Whoever it is, it's not going to make any difference to Shell, BP, and Monsanto, and all this kind of thing. So what should we do? Go and shoot them all? Could be dangerous even suggesting that. But even if you did, that wouldn't solve the problem, because the problem is this rampant lust and rampant mundane desire and greed. And the people who want that we should all live happily in a green world, they're also infected by the same disease. They have the idea that this world is the arena for us to live happily and indulge our desires. Whether you want to enjoy yourself in a green way or a black way, doesn't make any difference. Well, you could say one is better than the other, but it's the same basic disease. So the Krishna Conscious Movement, it aims at lifting the consciousness of everyone, and not just to make them green conscious, but to make them Krishna conscious, and understand the actual goal of life is not to live in a green world, but to live in a Krishna conscious world, in which Krishna, the pleasure of Krishna, this is the actual dharma of every jiva, is to Krishnarthe akhila cheshta. Every endeavor should be simply for Krishna's pleasure. When this is understood, then there is a possibility. Then only. Is there a possibility of correcting the terrible imbalance in human society? So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda, they have come in this Kali Yuga in which people are extremely disturbed, extremely stupid, extremely bad intentioned. Extremely short-lived. Prayanal payasa sabhya kalavasmin yuge janaha manda sumanda mati manda bhagehi upadruja. Extremely unlucky. He's come to make them lucky, intelligent, well-intentioned, to by the Yuga Dharma of Harinam Sankirtan, to make an all-round improvement to the human condition by establishing Dharma. Dharma can be established in this Kali Yuga not by having Hindu conferences, but by Harinama Sankirtan. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, He is the overseer, the maintainer of Dharma. Yeah, how are all the worlds held together? What's the glue? Is it gravity or is it Dharma? That's another function of Dharma, that all the planets are held together. That is all overseen by Krishna. And then how we act, that is overseen by Krishna. So if we act according to His desire, then the world will be much better. Our own life will be much better. But to establish all the principles of Dharma as it was in previous ages is practically not possible in Kali Yuga. So the great imbalance can be rectified by the Sankirtan, Yuga Dharma, propagation of the Sankirtan movement. Yeah. Oh, one other point there, that when the suras, those who are the demigods who are overseeing the functions of the universe, they may also make some mistakes. But Krishna, He rectifies them. He doesn't punish them in the same way that the demons are punished, but he rectifies them, just like Indra. He himself, Indra wanted to punish the residents of Vrindavan. Krishna didn't punish Indra, but he rectified him so that he could go on with his duties. So, Krishna, He oversees the demigods so that they can perform their functions properly for overseeing the universe. So, we can, with whatever little intelligence we have, we can appreciate the greatness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and dedicate ourselves to Him more and more and more, and that will be for our benefit. So we should hear regularly the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in this way our faith in Him will increase more and more, and our conviction to dedicate all that we have, which is really nothing, but everything is given by Him, but we have the choice to serve Him or not to serve Him. So our conviction to serve Him, that will be increased more and more and more by hearing about His glories. So any question about this? Yeah, please. We get credit for good thought in any in Kali Yuga. We don't get reactions for our bad thoughts. Yeah. This is Krishna's kindness. Why did He stop there? Why not make it more easy? Well, then we come down to the, if Krishna absolves all karmas, then we cease to be independent living beings. And there's no question of loving Him. It's just like, well, why doesn't Krishna stop all suffering? Why doesn't Krishna make everyone good? But if Krishna makes everyone good, or if he destroys the difference between good and bad, whatever you do, you get the same result, then there's no possibility to love him. And you don't have any independence left. Or whatever you do, you don't get a bad result. Well, that's going to create a chaotic condition in the world. So we have to act in a proper way. Causing suffering to others, Krishna, if he allows that, or if he doesn't give some reaction to that, then it'll be a horrible situation. He does that out of kindness for those who, both for the perpetrators of sins and the victims of sins. If there was no reaction to sinful activities, then it's just like if the police go on strike, then immediately all the rogues, they start pillaging. So some law and order is required. Krishna's police force is required. That's not to encourage bad thoughts, because bad thoughts lead to bad actions. But you don't get reactions just for thinking. If one can control it at that stage, then one has some bad desire, but one doesn't act on it, then one doesn't get a reaction for that. Otherwise, simply to think badly of others is, in other ages, one gets a reaction, sinful reaction for that. Would you suggest anything more? No? All right. Yes, please.
Fault finding is kind of one of those thoughts that the action kind of, it happens just in...
I have a kind of suggestion for you.
Yes.
Expunge kind of from your diction. It doesn't add anything.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a common habit here in America to kind of everything. The term fault-finding is not a very good term in itself. It's an English term. But if we don't see faults, then we can't distinguish between what is right and what is wrong. So to not fault-find, or to not be judgmental, to be wholly non-judgmental, puts us in a very dangerous situation. If someone, for no reason, commits a violent act against someone, and then we say, well, I don't want to be judgmental. But that is wrong. There is a difference between right and wrong. In the modern age, there's a lot of propaganda against all kinds of fault-finding and don't be judgmental. But that's very dangerous. If we don't distinguish between right and wrong, then that gives a license to do wrong, which is bad for the person who does it and bad for the person, all others who are wronged. So judgment is always there. We're always making judgments. We can't exist for a moment without making some judgment or other. But it's the attitude of... Thinking badly of others, or thinking ourselves better than others by ascribing fault to others, or presuming that others have bad intentions, That is what we can call fault finding. Otherwise, critical intelligence is required to make intelligent choices. And if we see that someone is doing something wrong, well, it is always, it is, it is wise not to immediately presume that someone has a bad intention if they do something which we see is wrong. There may be a reason for that also. There's a story or an anecdote. I don't know if it's true or not, but I don't know where I got this from. Maybe it's in one of those chicken soup books. But anyway, I mean, I don't recommend chicken. Just see the title of the book, Chicken Soup for the Soul. A horrible title. Chicken soup is supposed to epitomize that which is wholesome and loving. Not for the chicken. Ask the chicken if he wants to be made into soup. So anyway, I know where I got this from. Anyway, there's an anecdote of a man is sitting on a park bench, peacefully reading the newspaper. Then another man comes and sits down, and his kids are there, and the kids are running wild all around and screaming and yelling. So the newspaper reader, who is very peaceful, turns to the other man and says, "Why don't you control your kids?" And the other man says, "Well, I'm sorry. You see, their mother just died, and I'm just trying to think of how I can break the news to them." The one man presumed that the other man was being antisocially irresponsible, but he was, you have to empathize with a person in such a situation. So it's not good to just presume that someone is acting in a wrong way out of a bad motive. There may be some other reasons also. To presume bad intentions, that is the fault finding. And one who has a fault-finding mentality may also presume bad intentions even for someone who's doing good. If someone's doing good for others and you presume that they're doing it for some ulterior motive, for their own name and fame, which may be true in some cases also. Much of the altruism in this world is because people want to be known as good people. Not that they actually care for others and want to do them good, but they want to be known, they want to be advertised in human society as being good people. So that may be true also, but we shouldn't necessarily presume it in each case. Every living being by nature is a devotee of Krishna, yes. Yeah.
And orchestrates their so when is the time that Krishna starts orchestrating?
When does Krishna start orchestrating someone's coming to him? When does he give them special attention? When does he start to give them special attention and guide them to him? Whenever someone sincerely and seriously makes the decision that I want to surrender to Krishna, at that time Krishna takes them into, he takes special care of them. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, at the time of initiation, which is this, which he, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in this definition, he equates initiation with that exact decision to surrender to Krishna. That is the essence of initiation. Dikkakale, what is it? Dikkakale bhaktakare atashamarpan. At the time of initiation, or the time of initiation is when one decides that I want to surrender to Krishna. Shikale Krishna Tare Kare Atashama. And at that time Krishna takes the devotee to be one of his own. Subconscious, no, conscious. It has to be a conscious decision to surrender to Krishna. There's no subconscious decision to surrender to Krishna. It has to be in full consciousness. Yeah. Material disgust is the preliminary entrance into spiritual life. Srila Prabhupada writes that without being disgusted by material life, no one can make any spiritual advancement. So this idea to surrender to Krishna, that means that one is no longer interested in material enjoyment or material anything. One may have, due to having attachments from many previous lives, those anarthas of material desire may still be there in the heart, but the decision is there to overcome all those attachments and surrender to Krishna. So that's what it means that Krishna helps the devotee to come to him. If the devotee decides to surrender to Krishna, then why doesn't he just surrender to Krishna? He does, but we're held back by so many residual desires, and it's Krishna helps us to overcome them. He doesn't just zap them and destroy them, because we have to show our actual intent to surrender to Krishna. But Krishna helps us. If we make one step toward Krishna, Krishna makes 10 steps toward us, Srila Prabhupada said. But we have to make the step. We have to show that we're serious also. Yes, please. Krishna is lenient on the demigods, yeah. Sometimes Krishna is heavy, as with Chitraketu. He put him through so much suffering.
So when Indra, though he repeatedly does mistakes,
makes mistakes, yeah. But Krishna is lenient with him. Well, Krishna deals with, especially with those who are devotees and those who are demigods, Krishna deals with them individually in a manner that is best for their uplift. So he may deal with one person in one way and another in another. He may make one devotee poverty-stricken and another he may give him huge amounts of money. Whatever's best for that, what Krishna sees, whatever's best for that devotee's service. It's not that the one who gets more money is necessarily more favored by Krishna. That's what's meant by Suradhyaksha. He personally oversees the life of every devotee. Whereas Lokadhyaksha, that's in a more general way. Then the overseeing, that is much of the overseeing is done via the demigods. But the devotees, that is overseen by Radha, actually, that Srila Prabhupada explains that. Mahatmanas tumang partha daiving prakriti mashritaha. Bhajantyananya manaso gyatva bhutadim avyayam. Krishna, he oversees, the those who are devotees, they come under the protection of Krishna's divine energy, not the material energy. Under the material energy, one is supervised by the demigods. In the divine energy, one is overseen by the divine energy means ultimately Radha. And she has her assistants also. So that's the difference between internal energy and external energy. Devotees, they enter the internal energy. Whereas the non-devotees, they are conducted by the external energy. Any other question? Yeah. Who oversees the material world? Yeah, ultimately Krishna does. And he has his representatives, the demigods, especially the total overseer of the material world, the right hand, what was I going to say, right hand man? No, it's right hand woman. Srishti Stiti Pralaya Sadhana Shakti Reka Chayeva Yasya Bhuvanani Bibharati Durga Ichanarupam Api Yasya Chacheshtate Sa Govindavadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Durga is the overseer of everything in this material world, in all phases of creation, maintenance and destruction. She oversees under the direction of Krishna. And Lord Shiva, her husband, he's meditating. She's acting. She's the housewife, and the house is the whole material world. So he's just meditating, and she's overseeing the whole material world. So Durga is there, and so many demigods are there. Durga means the material energy personified. Yes. Something else you wanted to say about that? Bhagavati. Bhagavati is another name for Durga. She has so many names. She also has a Sahasranama. Lalita Sahasranama. Lalita is a common name in India for girls, but it's usually when they say Lalita, they usually mean Durga. When we say Lalita, we mean Gopi Lalita. But generally, among Hindus, if they say Lalita, they mean Durga. So she has, there's Lalita Sahasranama also in Shastra. She's important. Yeah. Her relationship with Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu.
How do they correlate?
Oh, how do they all correlate? Well, it's very complex. That's high-level management. It's a bit difficult for us down here to understand all that. Shiva is the destroyer. She's the husband of Durga. Brahma is her father-in-law. And Vishnu is her worshipable Lord. How does it all work? Well, we should make a course in the university, management studies. Universal management studies. How does it all work? Vishnu is there giving the orders. He's within everyone's heart. If there's any major disruption in the universe, he comes and settles it all himself. Or sometimes he has Lord Shiva do it also, occasionally, just like in Tripurari, that name is there. Lord Vishnu had Lord Shiva destroy the three residences of the demons. So ultimately it's all orchestrated by Vishnu, but he has out in front doing the work is Durga. Well, she's also subtle. We don't see her directly. So all these different demigods, and then they have sub-demigods, and it's quite an arrangement. exactly all, that's more than to be discussed at the end of class in a question. But ultimately Vishnu, maya adhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharachara hetunanena kauntya, I was saying that, hetunanena kauntya jagadviparivartate. Krishna's, ultimately everything is overseen by Krishna. Hare Krishna. All glories to Sri. Oh, you had a question also. Yeah. Yeah.
So there's different demigods in charge of different functions.
Yeah, different demigods in charge of different functions, yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct. But in charge means they're not independently in charge. Just like in a big institution, someone's in charge of a department, but that doesn't mean he's independently in charge. He also has to work under someone else.
So like when the body is becoming infected, or diseased, or dysfunctional, how is that with the body in charge of the proper function and the spirit also?
When the body becomes old and diseased and dysfunctional, what's the question? Means the demigods aren't doing their job properly? Oh well, that's part of the body is meant for that. The body gives us the facility to enjoy and to suffer. Sharira vyadhi mandiram. The body is a temple of disease. Ask Dr. Gopinath over here. How many diseases are there?
4,000.
In Ayurveda, they probably list some more. And how many phobias are there? Unlimited, practically. They go on inventing them all the time. Phobia for everything. So, yeah, it's all part of the plan. It's the demigods, they oversee it, means they're overseeing the whole plan of the universe. It's not for us to live in... It's not Vaikuntha. It's meant this material world is a place of suffering. Demigods, they're also overseeing that. I'm not exactly sure what your question was, but whatever I said is certainly true. The demigods are not there just to facilitate our happiness in this material world. There's demigod of death also, he oversees death. There are different inevitabilities within the material world, and so it's designed like that. Hare Krishna.